Hello, iterative marketers. Welcome to the Iterative Marketing Podcast, where each week we give marketers and entrepreneurs actionable ideas, techniques, and examples to improve your marketing results. If you want notes and links to the resources discussed on the show, sign up to get them emailed to you each week at iterativemarketing.net. There you'll also find the Iterative Marketing blog and our community LinkedIn group where you can share ideas and ask questions of your fellow iterative marketers. Now let's dive into the show. Well, hello everyone and welcome to the Iterative Marketing Podcast. I'm your host, Steve Robinson, and with me as always is the charming conversationalist, Elizabeth Aaron. Elizabeth, how are you doing today?
I'm good, Steve. How are you?
I'm doing great. I've been chastised lately because I have not seen the new Star Wars movie yet.
Are you a big Star Wars fan?
I wouldn't say that I'm a fan, but I'm definitely a non-fan, not a non-fan either. I think I really, really appreciate it, and I want the opportunity to see it with a clear head and plenty of time and not feel like I'm rushed and not worry about babysitters and these ideal conditions that I don't think are ever going to happen.
Yeah, it's you're putting a lot of thought into going to movies. Although I shouldn't say anything because I do have already scheduled a babysitter for a movie that doesn't come out until the end of July. So I should probably keep my comments to myself at this point.
Yeah, it's the question, you know, the conversation is a movie actually babysitter worthy, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, and the tickets and the popcorn, and it suddenly becomes a very, very expensive date night.
It becomes an investment.
It does.
So what are we talking about today if we aren't talking about Star Wars because I haven't seen it?
Today we're talking about campaigns and specifically what's so wrong about campaigns. We talk about this a lot, that you should get rid of your campaigns and replace them with programs. And so today we're kind of going to dive into why that is and really what the difference between a campaign and a program is.
I suppose we cannot continue to be ranting about the evils of campaigns if we don't explain why. So when we get into that, I think we should probably explain what a campaign is versus what a program is, right? Because when we say campaigns are evil or bad, we're really putting them in the contrast of a program, a marketing program, which is the term we like to use, right?
Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, I know we're talking about vocabulary here, but I think to your point, it's important to define it. So when we talk about campaign, I think it's the traditional campaign that most of us are used to, you know, hearing we talk about with our agencies and with our creative teams, but it's that big idea that gets constrained to a very specific time period.
Yeah, and it's not like there aren't objectives behind this big idea or an audience in mind behind this big idea, but usually it's a theme or an idea around which a variety of strategies or tactics are attached. To, right?
And it's one of those ideas where once it gets rolling and it gets the momentum behind them, it's hard to stop and it's hard to make adjustments.
A campaign does usually have a fixed start and end date. So it has a kickoff. It usually goes big. And then at some point it's defined that all the media shuts off and everything supporting this ends, right?
Yep. And it's usually replaced by another campaign.
And so, contrast that with what we call a marketing program. And a marketing program is a similar but very different animal, right?
And a program is, you know, it's funny because when we were talking about this, we had to kind of take a step back and think about the fact that we had never actually clearly defined what a campaign was and put a definition behind it. And so through the course of our conversation, what we came to conclude was that a program is an intersection of a defined objective for a defined audience with no definitive end date or end period in sight.
Right. So it's ongoing. It's never ending, or it ends when it ceases to be effective, right? Mm-hmm. And then it's targeting a particular group of people, a particular target audience. And that can change whether you're depending on how you've structured your business. So for our B2C clients, when we're working with somebody who's B2C, usually we're going to define a program around a given persona, because there you're going to have a lot of strategies and tactics that will probably support each other around getting that particular persona all the way through the buyer's journey to being a customer and then beyond, right? Mm-hmm. And then on the B2B side, we usually, that's where things get different depending on how your business slices and dices your audience and where you're going to combine your strategies and tactics. Sometimes a program for a B2B audience will be based on an industry, or again, based on a persona, or it may even be based on some combination thereof or some group of target accounts.
So our program, again, is a defined objective with a, for a defined audience for a without a specific time frame in mind. There's no definitive end period, whereas that campaign is that big idea that has a very specific time period. So with that being said, what is it about campaigns that are...
That makes them evil?
So bad. Yeah. I mean, what? I mean, really, what are we talking about? Why is it that we, you know, in iterative marketing are so against campaigns?
Well, I think one of the big things is there are a lot of things about campaigns that are inherently wasteful. And if there's one thing that drives me nuts, it's waste, right? And the biggest space that I see waste is in this whole time boxing concept, because a campaign has a fixed start and an end date. And how do you know before you get in there what that end date should be? You're really just sort of guessing or running off of past experience on other campaigns, which were entirely different around a different audience, a different idea, and a different objective. So that end date is kind of a gut feeling or based on budget. That always leaves something on the table, right? In some cases, what it leaves on the table is that that campaign could have run, or that campaign could have run longer. In other words, you yanked it because that's when the end date was. That's when we ran out of media budget. That's when it ends. And in reality, it would have been effective, you know, for another week, another month, maybe even indefinitely, because your audience is constantly churning and changing. And so you didn't even have to change creative. You could have just run that much longer, but you weren't measuring it to know when it needed to end. Sometimes it's cut far too late, and now you're running media that isn't effective. You're running messages and media that are not doing anything except for maybe really annoying the people who have seen it six times, right?
It's easy and it's hard. You know, campaigns fit into the corporate world very, very well and easily, because it's, again, you've got those clear times that it's running, so you can inform everybody what's going on. Everyone's on the same page. They know when it's going to stop. But you don't necessarily have those checks and balances to make sure that what you're doing is effective. And so that's where it's a little bit counterintuitive. And that's why programs, you know, make a little bit more sense in that sense of it.
Right. And in a program, you still have the latitude to change creative when a creative has run its course, but you keep the bones roughly the same, so that you know, the structure, the organization of the marketing program is going to remain the same and be consistent through its entire you know, indefinite duration.
And I think that's a really important point, because we're not advocating here that you take creative and you run it forever and ever and ever and ever. No, you're running it until it doesn't make sense to run anymore. And then you're replacing that with the appropriate creative that you have improved upon based on what you've learned from your program that was running previously.
While we're on the topic of what you learned while your program was running, you know, previously, I think that's a great segue into the second thing that really irks us about campaigns, and that is a lack of repeatability. When you're executing a campaign, chances are that this particular big idea, this hook, this method of reeling in the audience is going to be very different from the last one. The more different it is, the easier it is to sell, and the more exciting it is as you're starting to kick it off. So there's a goal to be as creative as possible. And in doing so, you're doing everything for the first time, and you're constantly reinventing the wheel. And when you contrast that with a program ends up being, again, your mechanisms, your core strategies are going to stay the same or are going to be improved upon incrementally. And you're not throwing the baby out with the bathwater and starting over from scratch each time. So you're able to take the time to refine and grow. And you're not doing things for the first time all the time.
You know, and this is one of those things. I love campaigns. I don't love campaigns. I love programs. But where I think programs really make sense for both corporate marketers and for agencies, you know, as an agency, you're constantly trying to come up with a new big idea that's going to impress your client. And as a corporate marketer, as the client, you're, you know, wanting to stay top of mind and be relevant. And so you're in this constant struggle to always have something new in the pipeline. And what's nice about moving from campaigns to programs is that you get to break that up a little bit. And so you're not constantly looking for this new big flashy idea. Instead, you're looking for the best possible way to serve your audience.
Yeah, and you're not walking on the brand side, on the corporate side, you're not walking into the CEO's office hoping that the next big idea that you're pitching is going to be, you know, going to resonate with him, right? Because now it's all based on metrics. It's based on repeatability, and you're getting out of that pitch cycle internally just as much as the agency is getting out of the pitch cycle when engaging with the brand.
Definitely. So one of the other reasons that campaigns are evil, we're attacking campaigns here, and we love programs so much, is the ability to apply what we've learned. And when we're working with a campaign, any lessons that we've learned from that campaign, they get thrown out because they're not necessarily applicable to whatever that next campaign may be or the next four campaigns may be, nor are there any benchmarks for performance metrics. When we take a look on the program side, we're able to build that knowledge up over time on what messaging works best and what media channels work best and which ones are most efficient in delivering our message to the right people at the right time. And we're able to, again, measure that over time and see where we've made improvements, but we're also able to learn from the insights that we've gleaned and apply that to the program moving forward.
Exactly. I mean, one of the core tenets of the optimization components of iterative marketing is to limit the number of changes, limit what you're changing as you're iterating and improving. And in a campaign arena, you're not limiting your changes. You're changing everything all at once when you swap campaigns. Whereas with a program, you are limiting those changes so you know exactly which changes resulted in a more favorable outcome versus the other ones. And so it really has the ability to take those lessons and those insights and apply them back, knowing exactly what had the positive impact and what had a perhaps even a detrimental impact.
I think that's a great point.
And that's actually a great segue right into our next kind of minor annoyance or major annoyance with campaigns is a lack of responsiveness. Campaigns fit snugly into the budget, right? You maybe you've got 1, 2, 3, 4 campaigns that fit within your budget year, and you're able to allocate your budget accordingly to each one of those campaigns. And usually you work with your agency or your internal teams, your creative teams, to go and structure out a campaign to fit the budget. And then rarely is there any money set aside or any resources or even time set aside to be responsive to either A, what you don't know going in, because you have to make a lot of assumptions coming into a brand new big idea, or B, changes in the marketplace. A lot of times these campaigns are planned up to a year in advance, and the market can change much more rapidly, particularly today with global competition and digital connectiveness and the ability for other brands, particularly smaller ones, to be very nimble.
And so programs give us that ability to remain nimble and actually have built into them a plan to make changes and to update the program. And so that's where we see more, a better efficiency in when we're talking about programs versus campaigns.
I think there's also a topic here on incentives. When you look at the incentives that get set up with a campaign versus a program, an unfortunate situation arises in the campaign camp in that I feel that marketers are actually disincentivized to measure.
Why would you? I mean, you've already convinced someone to spend all the money. So why do you want to go back and say, hey, thanks for giving me the blank check, but it's not working? It doesn't make us look good as marketers.
Exactly. And all it can do is erode confidence and set up challenges for the next pitch, right? Whereas in a program, your goal instead of is obviously to reach the objectives of the program, but it's also to improve on your ability to reach those objectives. And in order to do that, you have to measure. And so part of your reporting becomes not just on how many MQLs or SQLs are regenerating, or those are marketing qualified leads and sales qualified leads for those who aren't familiar with the terms, or how much revenue are we generating, but also how much are we improving on our ability to accomplish those goals? How are we iterating and improving and increasing the efficiency of our program? And those are great metrics to tout. So you're actually incentivized to do the measurement so that you can report on your incremental improvements. And it totally flips the game, right?
And when you can show those incremental improvements, it's easier to go back and ask for more budget dollars or additional budget dollars, which leads us in kind of to the next little speed bump that we hit when we're talking about campaigns, and that's budget allocation. And so when we're talking about a campaign, we, because it's a fixed, it's one big idea, it's over a fixed period of time, there's not any room in there for any adaptations or any extensions. And so that makes it a little complicated because, again, it's that fixed time, whether the market is demanding it or not, whether your customers are showing their interest or not, it's that fixed time. When we talk about programs, on the other hand, we build programs and we allocate budget specifically for growth, for adaptation, for extension, so that if the program is working the way that we anticipate that it's going to, we can continue it until it doesn't make sense to continue it anymore.
Exactly. And if it turns out that it's going well and there's an opportunity to spend more money, you have that track record to come back to leadership and say, hey, I know that we only budgeted X number of dollars for this particular program, but if you look here, we have a track record of being able to produce this degree of revenue or this number of qualified leads based on this input. And if we increase our spend, we should be able to increase leads or revenue accordingly. Can we get some more budget? And because you have that track record and you've been doing that measurement, it becomes easier to go back to the pot for more money, if and or when it makes business sense to do so.
And I think the final point, we are almost done beating up on campaigns here, but the final point comes down to demand and the consistency of demand. And when we talk about campaigns, we're seeing peaks and valleys in terms of demand generation. And this gets a little complicated when we're talking about, some of the leads, because we've got leads coming in at a different time, and there's a lot of inconsistencies there. And that turns into a lot of problems, not only for us, but for our sales team as well.
And for the business to fulfill as well. If you are creating peaks and valleys in the amount of demand that you're generating, then that means that the business has to be able to respond to peaks and valleys in the number of sales, if it's a physical good, in the ability to onboard multiple clients at once, if you're a services company. There's lots of challenges in being able to ratchet up and then scale down your fulfillment if you have demand going up and down. If you're running a program and the program is just incrementally improving as it plods along, it's a lot easier to make sure that you are able to fulfill on the demand that you're generating. I think that now is probably a good time for us to take a quick break and talk about how we can help some people. So, Elizabeth, why don't you do just that?
Before we continue, I'd like to take a quick moment to ask you Iterative Marketers a small but meaningful favor and ask that you give a few dollars to a charity that's important to one of our own. This week's charitable cause was sent in by Tara Vandegrift of iHeartMedia in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Tara asks that you make a contribution to the Life Navigators, an organization that has been providing services and creating opportunities for children with intellectual and developmental disabilities for more than 65 years. Learn more at lifenavigators.org or visit the link in the show notes. If you would like to submit your cause for consideration for our next podcast, please visit iterativemarketing.net/podcast and click the Share a Cause button. We love sharing causes that are important to you.
And we're back. So we spent the first half of this podcast just beating up horribly on campaigns here.
I think it was more than the first half. I think it was about the first three quarters, but that's okay.
Okay. Well, we spent way too long beating up on campaigns. We should probably talk about some extenuating circumstances where either a campaign or a campaign-like program is or some hybrid approach is really actually appropriate, because the world doesn't necessarily adapt to a program-centric marketing model easily. And so Elizabeth, what do you think is the primary use case for when you have to break from a pure program model?
You know, I think there's a couple of different scenarios, and I think we're going to go through a couple of those now. But I think the first one that pops in is those one-off events and opportunities that are available to you. And that's where it gets a little complicated, because the whole idea of a program is that it's continuous. But if you have a one-time event, continuous doesn't necessarily make sense. And so if it truly is a one-time deal, then yes, it does have to be a campaign. And we recognize that there is a time and a place for campaigns. But typically, even those one-off events, a lot of times are something that you can repeat because it becomes annual. and becomes something that you're going to do again in the future. And so when you look at it in that mindset, you can turn that campaign into a program. Even if it's 1 week this year and 1 week next year, you can still build off of what you've built so that next year you're not reinventing the wheel, you're not coming back to one big idea, and you're able to learn from your experience from the previous year. And a great example of that is when we look at it, either sponsorship opportunities or trade shows. A lot of time companies, once they have a sponsorship opportunity, that's something that they maintain and they continue to follow through every single year. And same with trade shows. If you participate in an industry trade show, then there's a good chance that either in the next quarter or the next year that you are going to participate in that same trade show. And that's where we have the opportunity to turn these one-time events into repeatable programs.
Exactly. I mean, if you're a contractor, you're participating in the home remodeling show, and there's a spring show and a fall show, and you can follow the same repeatable process for each show. And well, if you have, in that case, you're probably going to have different audience at each show. So you could even maintain the exact same creative and probably get away with it, allowing yourself to incrementally improve that creative based on feedback every single show. Now, there are instances where maybe you're talking to a more captive audience where you're going to get the same people over and over again, where you don't have the luxury of being able to reuse creative, but at least you can keep the structure, the strategies, and the tactics all the same over and over again and incrementally improve upon those as much as your creative might be changing out.
So your creative would change, but your channels and your process would stay consistent from show to show or from event to event.
Exactly, exactly. I see the same thing coming up with seasonality. If you are B2C, you have the holiday cycle that you have to work within, right? And that can be mean that you're going to have to make adaptations for that particular holiday cycle. But again, this could be an instance of taking a program that works in the off season, simply making sure the creative is relevant, and then increasing the amount of spend to make sure that you're breaking through any noise or clutter. The same thing could be true if you're in insurance, well, you have an open enrollment period for health insurance. So you're going to have to make sure that you are appropriately advertising during that time period in order to break through the clutter and noise of your competition.
And the seasonality extends beyond just holiday promotions. And I think a great example of this is a lawn care company. You know, their business is dictated by the weather. But each year it's the same process. You know, in spring you're doing getting ready to plant, and you've got the yard cleanup and getting things ready there and getting the sprinklers set back up and making sure everything's working, and then the maintenance through summer. And then when you get into fall, you've got cleanup and winterizing, or at least you do if you live somewhere that has winter. Our listeners in California and Florida probably don't know what we're talking about. But for those of us that do, you know, this is the same process over and over. Each year it's the same. And even though you're talking to the same customers, their needs haven't necessarily changed. And so your message may not even need to change. And to the point that you can test which message best works. And so after a few seasons, you've really honed in on the not only the content that's resonating, but the channels and the best ways to deliver that content to them.
I think another place that we have clients coming to us saying, well, we need a campaign for such and such, is around product launches. Mm-hmm. Because they're so used to when they launch a new product or service that we're going to launch a new campaign to go and drive demand for that particular product or service. And to some extent, doing something special for a new product launch might be not only make sense, but actually be a requisite of the business. Because if you're turning up a new particular service or product, you might need to be able to ramp up demand very rapidly for that particular product or service, or you're going to have a hard time fulfilling it because you can only produce, you know, you have a minimum number of units you can produce is such and such, and now you've got a bunch of stuff sitting in a warehouse if you don't ramp up demand to match your supply. And in those instances, what we generally recommend is if you've been doing programs instead of campaigns all along, chances are you have an existing program that is focused on reaching that same audience that this product is perfect for, right? And your objective behind that particular program has probably been to drive sales of similar products or services. So now you just have an opportunity to make sure that the creative aligns with that particular product launch and that you have adequate budget in order to get over that hump of generating that initial demand. And so it becomes taking an existing existing program and just cranking up the volume and swapping the creative in order to achieve your objectives. Where it gets a little different is if you don't have an existing program running.
And if you don't have a program, then you are going to need to set up as sort of you're going to need to set one up, and then you're going to have to start big instead of small, which kind of goes against some of our iterative marketing ideology here. But to meet your goals, you need to ramp up. I think the key here is that it's this hybrid approach that Steve mentioned, and it's really taking, some of the things that make programs so successful and so effective, and applying those to this campaign thinking to try and get the most that we can out of the money that we're spending.
Exactly. So how does this apply to traditional media? Because a lot of what we talked about is very digitally centric.
Yeah, and I think that's a really great question, and one that we get asked quite frequently. And it does, it does start with digital and kind of using digital as your, as you like to say, the canary in the coal mine to get an idea when your creative starts getting stale. We've got such easy ways that we can track this in digital, and we don't have those in traditional. And so we can use what we're learning through digital to then apply that across our traditional channels. And so that becomes a really great opportunity to, again, find out when it is that that content is getting stale.
And I don't think it's not just learning when your creative gets stale, because that's certainly part of it. But you can also use your digital to learn which messages you should be using on traditional as well. So as you iterate and improve your messaging in the digital channel, you now take that and you carry that over to the traditional channels. So now you have digital and traditional channels supporting the same program. But your learning occurs primarily on the digital side. Your application occurs across both.
That is a great point. Thanks, Steve.
One of the challenges that we see when we're working with clients that are trying to use both traditional and digital channels within a given program is that, I should say, challenges when they're trying to convert a campaign into a program is traditional media is often flighted, and by flighted means that it shuts off and turns back on, right? So you're not staying in market consistently. One of the keys to a successful program is maintaining a consistent presence. So when we make a change, we know that the change in results is due to the change that we made in either content or media. If you're flighting, then you never really know, because you're pulling content in and out of, you're pulling messages in and out of market, and you're turning channels on and off. The problem with just saying, well, okay, we will just stop flighting, we'll just keep content out there for forever, and we'll just change out creative, we'll keep that channel on. The problem with that becomes budget, because if you're doing anything that's mass media, the idea of running continuously become with any reasonable frequency, of your advertising becomes challenging. And so sometimes when you move from campaign thinking over to program thinking, it means changing up your media buys and maybe buying less expensive media, that it becomes possible to stay in market consistently and not be forced to flight.
And finally, it's taking a look at where we have opportunities to measure our traditional media. I mentioned earlier, it's easier to do that with digital, but it doesn't mean that it's impossible to do it with traditional. And the way that we do that, the way we get around that, not having that instantaneous, the clicks and being able to measure engagements and that sort of thing, is we use unique calls to action for measurement whenever possible. And so this can include vanity URLs, special phone numbers that have been created, that can track specifically who's calling from that ad. There's a variety of different tactics that can be used to measure traditional media, response to a traditional media ad.
I think that kind of wraps it up this week. We've beaten up campaigns enough for a day. But I want to thank everybody for making time for us today, and encourage everyone to join us next week when we'll be talking about See, Think, Do. Until then, onward and upward.
If you haven't already, be sure to subscribe to the podcast on YouTube or your favorite podcast directory. If you want notes and links to resources discussed on the show, sign up to get them emailed to you each week at iterativemarketing.net. There, you'll also find the Iterative Marketing blog and our community LinkedIn group, where you can share ideas and ask questions of your fellow iterative marketers. You can also follow us on Twitter. Our username is @ITER8IVE, or email us at podcast@iterativemarketing.net. The Iterative Marketing Podcast is a production of Brilliant Metrics, a consultancy helping brands and agencies rid the world of marketing waste. Our producer is Heather Ullman, with transcription assistance from Emily Bechtel. Our music is by Seastock Audio Music Production and Sound Design. You can check them out at seastockaudio.com. We'll see you next week. Until then, onward and upward.